His real name is George Frayne. But if you're an old enough rocker, you probably know him as Commander Cody, who, along with his Lost Planet airmen, has been making music on and off for decades and decades and decades.
Smoke, smoke, smoke a cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you puff yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you just hate to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
The piano-playing commander's work sits prominently on Rolling Stone magazine's list of the top 100 albums of all time. But along with the boogie-woogie swing, country, and rock, there is another side to Commander Cody, George Frayne, the visual artist. He has a master's degree in sculpture and painting from the University of Michigan, has exhibited his work from Austin to Tokyo, has a video in the Museum of Modern Art, and now has a new book called Art, Music, and Life. His quotation on the cover sums it up pretty well. I have been painting for a long time. I have been rocking for almost as long. The tales of adventures in both cases run together and in some cases intersect. Here are the stories and the art of these moments. George Frayne, a.k.a. Commander Cody, joins us now from member station WUSF in Tampa, Florida. Welcome to the program.
Greetings from the sunny south.
And do I call you George? Do I call you Commander? Do I call you Cody? What? How would you want to be referred to?
Any one of the three. People call me all those things and more.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. This is, a really entertaining book, just thumbing through it. You've got pop art portraits of musical legends from Willie Nelson and Jerry Garcia to Sarah Vaughan and Charles Mingus. And then there's abstract work, still lifes, an intricate drawing of a mammoth as a machine, an elaborately painted sculpture of a horse, lots of automobile grills. Are you inspired by a lot of things?
Well, yeah, there's you can say that. Yeah, it's absolutely true. I've been collecting images of, the boy-type things when I was a kid, cars, planes, trains, anything like that. For instance, if you take a look, there's a Harley-Davidson, and it looks like a motorcycle, and you zero in, okay, there's the engine. You go way inside the engine, and you can't tell what it is until you back up and get the perspective on it. And that intricate little inner portrait is the kind of thing that we do. I'll take a Harley engine and concentrate on the heating vanes, stuff like that.
Yeah, you say in the book, though, I'm probably the only musician who actually stayed in art school. Was there a constant tug between music and art? And how did you manage to balance both?
It was actually a lot easier than that for me when I was in school, because I started out not really being anything more than a guy that could play a little boogie-woogie piano. And we wound up playing at frat parties. We did Wooly Bully three times a night, Louie Louie more than that, and made a couple of hundred bucks a week. And the people from Wisconsin State University, it's now University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, called me up and said, for $25,000 a year, why don't I come there and start a sculpture department? And I got there, and it was freezing cold, and they gave me a garage with no heat in it. A couple of months later, I said, this is really ridiculous. It's 20 below. My friend Bill Kirchen, the guitar player, famous guitar player now, is out in San Francisco, and he's telling me that all the bands out there are starting to become a little countrified. Jerry Garcia is learning how to play pedal steel guitar. You better get out here. And I got to California on June 4th, 1969, and by August 28th, we were opening up for the Grateful Dead.
We want to play a little bit of your most famous song from those days. It's from your first album, Lost in the Ozone, Hot Rod Lincoln.
That was a big hit.
Yeah, let's reflect a bit.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that Hot Rod Lincoln. Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true, I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up. That Model A body makes it look like a pup's got eight cylinders and uses them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall.
It's nice to have a little nostalgia. brings up your love of cars. You know, your book, you have anecdotes of this bygone era. You actually start off with the Hunter Thompson event, which opens with the line, yes, it's true that the late Dr. Hunter S. Thompson once tossed a bomb into my hotel room.
It wasn't like a bomb. It was more like a bowling ball-size group of M-80s, all gaffers taped together. So the bomb didn't go off kaboom. It went off bam, 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 bam.
Oh, my goodness.
Great. Now, at the time, this was a bummer, but now it makes a good story.
It makes a good story. You know, and I turn the page, the next thing I see is Louis Armstrong. And you were actually, what, sort of providing security for...
Jones Beach, you know, I don't know if everyone knows where Jones Beach is,
but
Jones
Beach
is on it's in New York on the southern part of Long Island. And they gave a bunch of us the job of being security at the Jones Beach Marine Theater, which now does rock concerts and stuff like that. Well, they were doing the Showboat. And then after the show, Louis would do an hour and a half live show. In between shows, I was backstage, and I twisted one up, and I was smoking away, you know, making sure nobody saw what I was doing. And it said this giant face, all of a sudden, I see behind the head, with the one and only smile. He goes, yes, 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 looks good. So I went over to him, and I took a toke off the joint. I went over, handed it to him. I said, listen, why don't you go back and turn the boys out of this? And he did. And he sent his manager or his valet or somebody came out and said, well, Mr. Armstrong would really like to thank you for the gauge. And told me that following story that I have in the book about Louis coming back from Africa, and every African chief in the world gave him his own personal stash, so Louis' trumpet case is full of weed. And at this, they're lining up to go through customs at JFK, and Louis on the end of the line, he realizes when they get down to him, he's going to get busted. So at that same moment, the famous Richard Nixon South America tour, where he almost got killed by the mob, happens to coincide, and into the customs area comes Richard Nixon, followed by all the press. Click, 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 flash bub, hug, hug, how you doing, Louis? Hands him the trumpet case, and Richard Nixon walks the trumpet case through customs. And they're out, and he's home free.
I want to flash forward a little bit with your career. I mean, you and your airmen, your fortunes waxed and waned over the years. You made some poor albums, the band broke up, you semi-retired from music and concentrated on painting. But then you reformed the Airmen. Last year you recorded your first album in almost 20 years on Blind
Right.
Pig Records. And Dopers, Drunks, and Everyday Losers. I want everyone to hear your remake of your earlier classic, Wine, Do Your Stuff.
Today was the last day, played me for a fool. I stopped in here like I always do before I lose my cool. I need to make my mind relax. I think I've had enough. Come on, wine, wine, wine. Do your stuff.
I have to say, in this era of clean and sober living, your songs and stories are unabashedly pro-decadence. Is that the stand you still take?
Yes, thank you. So, someone's got to carry the flag.
Well, is it fun to be out there playing gigs again? It sounds like it
oh,
is.
Oh, well, it sure is. You know, I'm not just playing three sets, four sets a night at a sleazy bars. You know, I'm back doing the regular show bars, and the comeback has been really great. I mean, who would have known that I would even live to be 65 years old, let alone be healthy and doing really well? Well, healthy except for the fact that I still walk a little bit of a limp from the giant collision I got into. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good, and Lord knows I'm still alive and rocking.
Sure. And can you separate the satisfaction you get from music from the satisfaction of making art, or is it all
part
of it?
Well, it's completely different. It's completely different, because as soon as you finish your last note of your last set, when you're playing, it's over. You know, and the only way to get back into that feeling is to come back at another time on another stage and do it again. When you do art, it's there. And you live with it from day to day. You live with it from hour to hour. A lot of times I'll do a painting and it's not going very well. And sometimes I'll paint it. I'll paint that over with white and start again. Sometimes I'll put it aside and pick it up 5 years later.
George Frain, also known as Commander Cody. His new book is called Art, Music, and Life. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
You can see paintings by George Frain and hear Commander Cody's music at nprmusic.org. This is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed by Elaine Heinzman and produced by Peter Breslow, Sarah Bayer-Kelly, Ned Wharton, Walter Ray Watson, Kimberly Adams, Gemma Waters, Thomas Pierce, Veronica Miller, Jonathan Rappaport, and Sarah Coe. Our technical director is Burke Hunn. Our librarian is Kim Maleski. Melissa Goh is our web producer. Our senior editor is Tony Marcano. The senior producer of Weekend Edition is Bridget Kelly. I'm Leanne Hansen.